I think it's time to think about saving reputations and not cooperating with a regime that will end up in The Hague for everything they've done.
Growing opposition to Russia. It's Tuesday, March 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, President Biden is set to make a big speech. Anti-war protests fill streets. Seeking accountability for Sri Lanka human rights. Australian tourism returns 50 years after an historic China visit. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations Security Council voted Sunday to hold an emergency special session of the wider membership in the General Assembly this week on Russia's invasion of Ukraine, after Moscow blocked a draft resolution in the Council deploring its aggression. Russia also voted against the move to the General Assembly, but as it was a procedural vote, no vetoes were in play. The vote broke down identically to Friday's failed resolution, with 11 of the 15 Security Council members supporting it, and China, India, and the UAE abstaining. The vote underscores White House claims of international unity in support of Ukraine, and comes ahead of U.S. President Joe Biden's State of the Union speech later Tuesday. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Ukraine remains under attack from advancing and unprovoked Russian forces fighting their way to the capital, Kyiv. The United States and Western allies increased sanctions in recent days against Russia's financial infrastructure, targeting banks like VTB and Sberbank, which are the country's two biggest and account for half of the country's banking system.
The sanctions that we announced are on par, put Russia on par with Iran, cutting them off from a banking system with the global community. We have now also sanctioned 80% of their banks and their financial sector. This is makes it very difficult for President Putin and the Russian government not only to do business, but also to help fund a greater expansion of their military and greater expansion of innovation in their country.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, who ordered the invasion of Ukraine on Thursday, they called the sanctions unfriendly and ordered nuclear deterrence forces on alert, signaling an increased preparation for launch.
This is a full-fledged, unjust war. And I think it's time for many American businesses also to think. I know how hard it is, and I know this is business interest. As the former Minister of Finance, I understand. But I think it's time to think about saving reputations and not cooperating with a regime that will end up in The Hague for everything they've done and they're doing now to Ukraine.
This comes after Ukrainian forces, many of whom were civilians at this time last week, have so far resisted Russian efforts to advance on the capital or topple any major city. The Ukrainian Defense Ministry released this unverified video claiming to show a drone strike destroying a Russian military convoy. The calls for reinforcements continue.
It's time to remove all Russian financial institutions from the international payment system. It's time to impose sanctions on his oil and gas exports, which he uses as his primary means of financial support. We need to rush those weapons that were announced for delivery to the front: anti-tank, anti-aircraft missiles, sniper rifles, ammunition, fuel supplies. It should have been done weeks ago, so better late than never, but the Ukrainians have no time.
Ukraine has agreed to meet for peace talks with Russia without preconditions at a spot along the border with Belarus. Around the world, pro-Ukraine demonstrations call for peace, including in Washington, where U.S. President Joe Biden is scheduled to deliver his State of the Union speech Tuesday before a joint session of Congress. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
We have more in just a moment on what has turned out to be a very important State of the Union speech. When it's delivered, you may hear it and see it streamed live on VOA Asia social media. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Ukraine anti-invasion protests continue in Bangkok. China willing to work with United States on Build Back Better World Initiative. Thousands could die from COVID in Hong Kong, according to a study. Taliban defend door-to-door searches in Kabul, bar future evacuations of Afghans. Counting both U.S. and Russia as partners, India faces diplomatic test in Ukraine crisis. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. See us on Instagram and Twitter as well, and at voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The escalating conflict in Ukraine, the grinding pandemic, and as always, the economy are likely to dominate President Joe Biden's first State of the Union speech later Tuesday. Political observers say this customary presidential speech comes at an unusual time in history. VOA's Anita Powell has more.
There's not a single thing.
The constitutionally mandated address is the rhetorical highlight of the year for a U.S. president. Joe Biden is no exception. But this year's State of the Union, his first, although he has previously addressed a joint session of Congress, comes at an especially fraught time. The White House says that during the Tuesday night speech, Biden is likely to discuss Russia's invasion of Ukraine and provide his wider view of the world.
We're in the middle of an active invasion, so I just can't give you a preview of what that will look like in the State of the Union. As it relates to how the president views his approach to foreign policy, the president has ran for president wanting to return America's seat at the world, wanting to return to a time where other leaders around the world could trust the word and the commitments of the United States. And what you have seen over the last few months is the president deliver on exactly that.
In the past week, Biden has delivered several speeches on the escalating crisis in Ukraine. Among Americans, Biden should expect a partisan split in the reaction he gets when discussing what he sees as the greatest threat to global security since World War II.
The country generally rallies behind a president when we face an international crisis. If you watch Tucker Carlson or listen to Donald Trump, or know what many Republicans in Congress have been saying, we're not going to get that rallying around the president by a significant share of the population. The tribal divisions are there now for even things that affect American national security.
Presidents also use his speech to sell Congress on their domestic agenda and bills they want to pass. And there is one topic every president is expected to cover in the State of the Union address, says Jeremy Suri, a historian at the University of Texas at Austin.
Every president comments on the economy because they all want to say the state of the economy is such that we are getting richer, we are doing better than ever before. The only exceptions when presidents don't talk about the economy are when we are at war ourselves.
One thing that is certain, America and much of the world will be listening to what he has to say. The address begins at 9 p.m. in Washington on Tuesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, the Russian invasion of Ukraine has pushed people out into the streets. Happening now in Asia, supermarkets in Hong Kong were emptied Monday after panic buying amid worries the government would impose a lockdown as the city's worst coronavirus outbreak continues. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today for VOA Asia. After Russian troops invaded Ukraine Thursday morning last week, Americans quickly took to the streets. Groups pleading for peace and for an end to the war protested across the country. VOA senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Pursuti has our story.
Stop Russia now! Stop Russia now!
They chanted in New York City's Times Square with emotions overflowing.
Stop the war!
And marched toward the Russian mission as Russian tanks were nearing Kyiv in Ukraine. New York City is home to about 150,000 Ukrainians, like Katerina Belayeva.
There's no words that can describe the horror and the shock, even though we've had warnings for weeks.
Every asset they have in America will be frozen.
President Joe Biden announced further sanctions against Russia, dealing with banking and currency. Weeks prior to the invasion, Belarus allowed Russian troops on its land, clearing a path to attack its southern neighbor, Ukraine, from the north. Sasha Vasileva is from Belarus.
I feel so ashamed that my country is supporting this regime and this aggression. And I feel so ashamed that people of my country do that and they kill Ukrainians.
Stop Putin Sorry. Now! Stop Putin now!
Police shut down more than 20 blocks in New York City for the march. This driver detoured because of the protest added his support.
Putin out of Ukraine! Putin out of Russia! Putin's out of his mind!
On the other side of the country, in Denver, protesters gathered at the state capitol. Some saying Russia deserves more than sanctions.
Troops of NATO, they should go inside of territory to Ukraine and help from inside to help against Putin.
Others disagree.
That military action is not an option in my opinion, because once it starts, it never ends.
More protests are planned. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. North Korea's official news agency said the government claimed its latest missile test Sunday was for development of a reconnaissance satellite system. South Korea reported it was fired from an area near Pyongyang, where its international airport is located. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet is raising concerns about the lack of accountability in Sri Lanka after gross violations of human rights there. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In a report, UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet finds human rights violations and abuses are continuing to spread throughout the country. She attributes that to the failure of the government to carry out necessary reforms to its legal, institutional, and security sectors. The High Commissioner spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, says the government has shown some willingness to initiate reforms. However, she notes the steps taken so far do little to address past human rights violations or redress the harm done to victims. Since the 1980s, an estimated 60,000 to 100,000 people from all ethnic and religious communities have disappeared. To this day, the fate of thousands of those who have gone missing remains unknown. Shamdasani says the suffering of the families of the disappeared is immense and must be acknowledged by the government. She says victims must receive reparations and perpetrators of these crimes must be brought to justice.
The reason why we are highlighting these issues is because they are very serious issues. I mean, the militarization, the ethno-religious nationalism, the continued lack of accountability, and you couple that with a pattern of surveillance and harassment of those who try to speak out, civil society organizations, human rights defenders, journalists, and it's a recipe for further human rights violations.
Shamdasani says the Prevention of Terrorism Act Amendment Bill, which was presented to Parliament on February 10th, is an important initial step.
We welcome the proposed increase of magistrates' powers to visit places of detention, the speeding up of trials, and the repeal of a section which imposes serious limitations on publications. However, other proposed amendments do not comply fully with Sri Lanka's international human rights obligations, and it leaves intact some of the most problematic provisions of the PTA, the Prevention of Terrorism Act.
Shamdasani says the High Commissioner has shared her concerns with the Sri Lankan government. She says the government has engaged constructively with her office and has made some relevant comments. The report will be presented to the UN Human Rights Council, which begins a five-week session next week. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, Nepal's parliament ratified a $500 million grant from the United States with an interpretive declaration stipulating Nepal will not become part of any strategic, military, or security alliance, including the Indo-Pacific strategy of the United States. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, travelers may once again visit Australia. And some in Nepal are making their feelings known in the streets, as we hear in today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascajo.
Australia opened its international borders to all vaccinated tourists nearly 2 years after the island nation first imposed some of the world's strictest COVID-19 travel restrictions. It's fair to say we've all been waiting a long time to welcome visitors back to Australia. The flag carrier of Australia, Qantas Chief Executive Alan Joyce, said, "The national carrier expects to bring more than 14,000 passengers into Australia this week, the start of what many believe will be a long, slow recovery for a tourism sector devastated by the pandemic. The travel ban also barred citizens from traveling overseas without an exemption and imposed a strict cap on international arrivals. It earned the country the nickname Fortress Australia." Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry said every month under the policies has cost businesses an estimated $3.6 billion Australia dollars, with tourism particularly hard hit. $3.6 billion Australia dollars is about $2.6 billion US dollars. Bernie Edmonds, a local resident, is picking up his granddaughter at the airport.
"Oh, it's great to have her back. She's going to go again, but we'll get her back again."
The Australian government has launched a $40 million Australia dollar advertising campaign to lure tourists back, which is about $28 million US dollars. Nepal police fired rubber bullets and tear gas on Sunday as hundreds protested against a $500 million U.S. grant going before Parliament that has become a bone of contention between China and the United States. Nepal signed the Millennium Challenge Corporation Pact in 2017 to fund infrastructure projects, but its ratification has been in limbo because of divisions within political parties, including the ruling coalition. Several people were injured in the latest day of angry demonstrations outside Parliament as the government put the bill before lawmakers ahead of a February 28th deadline to pass it. There is major opposition from Prime Minister Sher Bahadur Duba's coalition partners, including Maoist politicians, seen as traditionally close to China, who say it undermines Nepal's sovereignty. Indian Daily The Hindustan Times reported Washington believes China is behind a disinformation campaign against the pact. According to Nepali media, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for both South and Central Asian Affairs Donald Liu recently held separate telephone conversations with Nepali politicians, urging them to endorse the MCC pact by February 28th, or Washington would review its ties with Nepal. Days later, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin said such development cooperation should come with no strings attached. The MCC, created by the U.S. Congress in 2004, offers large grants to support economic growth and reduce poverty, according to Washington. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
This is Science in a Minute.
Medications that include opioids have long been used as effective painkillers. But according to the Mayo Clinic's website, even brief use of opioids can lead to addiction and overdose. Opioid misuse and overuse have become a serious public health crisis in countries the world over, including the United States. Findings in a recent study by researchers at Canada's McMaster University show that using alternative painkillers may help cut down the dependence on these addictive medications. Researchers writing in the Canadian Medical Association Journal found that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs such as ibuprofen are actually better at controlling pain than opioid-based codeine painkillers. The study adds that there are fewer undesirable reactions with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs than codeine. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This week marks the 50th anniversary of President Richard Nixon's historic 1972 visit to China, which opened relations between the United States and China's communist government after more than two decades of mutual distrust. As VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports, the anniversary comes at a fraught time in U.S.-China relations.
A stroke of diplomatic genius or a strategic blunder? Nixon's opening to China in 1972, which changed geopolitics, has been called both. Winston Lord, a top aide to then-National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger and a later ambassador to China, was present at those meetings with Nixon, Kissinger, and Chinese leaders Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai.
We had no communication. And so we had great tension with China, one-fifth of the world's people. We also had a very uneasy relationship with the Soviet Union, the other nuclear superpower.
The United States was fighting a war in Vietnam, and both China and the Soviet Union supported America's North Vietnamese enemy. But the Soviet-Chinese relationship was rocky, and the Nixon administration hoped by reaching out to Beijing, it would gain an advantage in its dealings with the two communist nations. After Nixon's China trip, the U.S. made progress with the Soviets on nuclear arms control and on ending the Vietnam War.
And we moved in the next few months with the assistance of Moscow and Beijing to complete the negotiations on the Vietnam War.
In 1979, the United States formally recognized China's communist government while maintaining an unofficial relationship with Taiwan. President Nixon called the visit the week that changed the world, and it changed China, says another analyst who spoke with VOA Mandarin's Si Yong.
First of all, to the degree to which we helped create an environment that let Deng Xiaoping begin to modernize the country, we had 40 years of peace.
At that international chessboard level, I would say it was successful. It did what they wanted it to do, but it completely ignored the reality of life for the Chinese people.
China's leaders saw the state as maintaining absolute power, adds critic Perry Link.
At the human rights level, at the spread of democracy level, at the humane level, it was fairly disastrous, I would say.
Yet looser controls on business allowed the Chinese people to transform their economy and boost their standard of living. China and the United States are now economically entwined, but they disagree bitterly in such areas as trade and human rights. Despite that, one analyst says,
it isn't easy. It doesn't always progress, but it's always been useful to try.
China has refused to criticize Russia's invasion of Ukraine, just the latest example of how Beijing frustrates its trading partners that are democracies.
China and Russia are getting closer together. This is the opposite of what Nixon was trying to achieve.
Still, since 1972, the United States and China have continued to engage, each nation pursuing its own interest, not without disagreements.
And that pragmatism powered the U.S.-China relations for decades. It may be coming apart now. You're starting to see stronger ideological trends in both China and the United States. And that is one of the sources of friction.
Friction is high now, although the Chinese ambassador to Washington, Qing Gong, spoke at the Nixon Library in California Thursday, urging the United States to take a strategic long-term view of U.S.-China relations. Henry Kissinger joined the commemoration remotely. U.S. officials have no plans to commemorate the anniversary of the visit, at least this week. Monday will be the 50th anniversary of the Shanghai Communique, which listed U.S.-China differences and specified areas of future cooperation. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to VOA Asia. Continue with us online. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Also our website, voanews.com. Thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.